In this episode, we learn all about Steve. But really, can anyone learn all about Steve?
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Brock Mahan.
Yeah, that's right. Elliot is gone. He didn't die.
Enough about Elliot. what's Brock's story?
Well, no, let's just for a second. Elliot is out in California. He's
sure he
he's
is.
He's laying the groundwork for his wedding.
And what a groundwork!
Mm-hmm. He's like John the Baptist for his own wedding. He's preparing.
That's how prolific he is. Mm-hmm. Is that he not only is he the savior of his wedding, he's also the hype man for it.
Yeah, he's like my wedding 2010 bitches. That's what a hype man does.
That sounds
right?
A lot like
yeah.
a lot
if John the Baptist came back today. That's exactly what he would sound like.
But Brock, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Stuart was asking you beforehand, and I said, save it for the podcast.
Well, I mean, we've done one of these before, and I don't remember all the stuff about Brock, and I want to build, you know, I really...
All about Brock?
Yeah, I want to be all about Brock tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a TV writer. I wrote for a show on True TV called The Smoking Gun Presents The World's Dumbest. I'm also one of the editors of a publication that Dan McCoy is a frequent and prolific contributor to called Whim Quarterly.
Issues available.
Yes. At
WhimQuarterly.com. Buy them, please.
At one store in Brooklyn, if you make your way to Desert Island Comics in Williamsburg, there's exactly one copy left.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear.
You should you should run, don't walk.
Yeah,
to that store.
Yeah,
there's only one copy left.
If one of the listeners gets that one remaining copy, we should probably give them some sort of prize.
Absolutely, yeah. Send us an email at folks at whimquarterly.com, and we'll figure out something from the archives to send you.
Yeah, Brock was with us once before for Paul Blart Mall Cop. And when we asked him to come again, he said, all right, but I want a really bad movie this time.
And I'm very pleased that you kept up your end of the deal.
Yeah, no, we...
Spoiler alert.
In spades, we came up with the Razzie Award winning All About Steve.
Spoiler alert.
Wait, is it a spoiler for the podcast? The fact that we watched All About Steve?
Guess what? We're talking about a movie.
Yeah, yeah. we haven't gotten to the big reveal about what movie we're going to watch yet.
I mean, it'll probably be in the title of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, and you put the movie poster.
Yeah, I usually put all the information on the website.
What's the movie poster for this one look like?
I assume Sandra Bullock figures in it prominently.
Okay.
Maybe some red boots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it? Do you put like a link to the movie trailer, or do I have to go to IMDb for that?
I put a link to the Wikipedia synopsis.
Okay.
On the page, because sometimes I feel like we are remiss in giving enough synopsis information for people to follow along.
Mm.
So I just feel like if people really want to know what's going on, they can go to Wikipedia beforehand, and then they can understand what we're saying about the movie. I mean, like. You know, I want to address this. Our mutual friend Brad Stewart.
He's no friend of mine.
Okay. He criticized us about sometimes getting off the topic of the movies.
What?
And there's a lot of digressions in the Flophouse.
What?
And I think that the thing is, like, to me, the Flophouse has always been a comedy show.
Wait a minute.
That's about movies.
Wait a minute,
but I think
Dan.
Brad thinks it's a movie show that's got some comedy in it.
Wait a minute, Dan. Your cat is climbing into a box right now. That's adorable.
Okay, well, that's illustrated. That's a sort of digression that I'm sure Brad is talking about. I mean, if this was a video podcast and we could show the cat going into the box, I think that everyone would agree that
okay,
it's
let me describe it. It's hilarious. And wait, the cat's now smelling the table.
Okay.
Which, believe me, is more adorable than going into the box.
Yeah, that's totally...
Well, now that we've
what were we talking about?
Now that we've angered Brad by spending 12 minutes up top describing something about the cat that he can't see, we watched All About Steve.
Okay.
Stewart.
A comedy, rom-com, right?
Mm-hmm. In the absence of Elliot, Would you like to take lead on synopsizing this movie?
Well, I was going to make Brock do it because he's our guest.
Holy shit.
All right.
And because I don't pay like close attention to these movies.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give it a shot. Well, for starters, I learned much less about Steve Wozniak than I thought it was going to, which was disappointing. But, all right, well, I guess it's the story of a crossword puzzle editor, a cryptoverbalist, I believe.
Yeah, someone who writes crosswords.
She's very good at her job. She's very good at cranking out crossword puzzles, but somehow can't get that same order into her personal life. She lives with her parents. She has had little success.
Her parents, Howard Hessman and the lady who was in charge of Sparkle Motion in Donnie Darko.
That was the guy from Head of the Class, right?
Well, also WKRP in Cincinnati, Dr. Johnny Fever.
But he was in Head of the Class, right?
He was. He was the non Billy Connolly guy.
Just as Francis Ford Coppola was the director of Jack.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so this cryptoverbalist, this crossword puzzle editor, lives at home with her parents. Is striking out when it comes to finding physical companionship of the opposite sex. So her parents decide to set her up on a blind date with the
Is it ever established, by the way, how they know Steve?
No, it isn't at all.
Okay,
yeah. I assume they seem like cool people. That might be just one of their young friends that they like to make.
Yeah, I mean, Howard Hessman's involved. Maybe he's like Steve's dealer.
Mm.
It's possible.
Sure.
Anyway.
Like a dealer of what?
Oddities,
curios?
I was thinking marijuana, but it could be rare books. Sure, okay. Why not?
Okay. He does have a striking... Howard Hessman in this film has a striking resemblance to Allen Ginsberg. So it could be, you know, that seems like something he would deal in. You know,
yeah.
Rare first volumes. Leather-bound volumes.
And this Steve character seems like he would partake in those.
Yeah.
He seems like a reader.
Yeah, a real Renaissance man. That's what I think of when I think of Bradley Cooper.
I think chiseled abs and pecs.
Mm-hmm. I think ridiculous gelled hair.
Okay. I think of perfectly manicured chest hair. Come on, Dan. Can you keep it up?
Wet Hot American Summer.
Okay. So continue, Brock. Please.
Okay. So, Bradley Cooper, aka Steve, they go out on their blind date. He meets Sandra Bullock's character at her parents' house, and she is immediately smitten, so much so that she has to go upstairs to her bedroom and redo her entire wardrobe.
Yeah, to make it more hookery.
Yes, I think that's the only way to describe it. Although, weirdly enough, she has a few character quirks. I know, it's shocked me too, but one of them is that she wears, I guess, like knee-high red leather boots all the time.
Platform boots, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she's clearly...
Because they make her 10 toes feel like they're, what was it, like 10 friends on a camping trip together.
Mm-hmm.
So, spoiler alert, that's why she wears those boots.
Thanks that mystery is solved. Yeah.
You know, you'll be wondering all through the movie, why does she wear those boots? And then at the end, there's a monologue that explains why she wears those boots.
I thought it was because she worked part-time for a foot fetish website.
It's possible. I don't think that, you know, writing crosswords is a very lucrative profession.
So she needs to work part-time as a foot fetish model.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And being a crossword puzzle editor, she probably knows the exact term used to describe a foot model fetishist.
And by the way, crossword puzzle writer, bullshit quirky job for a bullshit quirky rom-com. Anyway, carry on.
Okay, so she goes up. She changes her outfit. Steve decides, you know, okay, let's go to a restaurant. They get into their Jeep, and Sandra just cannot contain herself. Like a dog in heat, just pounces on this poor Steve. Mauls his face with kisses.
Yeah.
Would she be a cougar?
I don't think that this movie wants us to think that she is a cougar, but... Looking at her in this movie, she seems like a cougar. Yeah,
I mean, how old was she in Demolition Man?
I don't know. I mean, she's not in the spring of her years anymore. She's still an attractive lady, but they do not make her look attractive in this movie.
Okay,
I mean, particularly when she doffs her top, because you can see the wrinkles in her sternum, like her breastbone is clearly visible through the thin sheen of skin.
It's her most prominent feature in that scene.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so things get hot and heavy. The top comes off, And so for some reason that's never quite explained, Bradley Cooper starts to get turned off. And it's almost immediately after he places both his hands on her breast. So I assume it has something to do with the shape and texture of her mammary glands.
Or brassiere. I mean, come on.
It's true. It was pretty tacky.
Knock her small boobs.
Oh, it was the size? You think it was the size of her breast?
Yeah, duh. He's okay. A dude.
Okay.
God.
I mean, you know, some gentlemen like a proportional breast. They aren't large breast fetishists like you are, Stuart.
Weird. Okay. Yeah, sorry about getting derailed, Brock.
That's fine. Move
on. I know that I do a lot of digressions about things.
And stuff.
Yeah.
So Bradley Cooper immediately, I have to get out of this situation. You know, I'm feeling like the audience, this is the most unsexy thing I've ever witnessed or been a part of.
Yeah.
So he makes up a lie because he's a TV news cameraman.
Yeah, he needs a smoke bomb out of there, right?
Exactly. And his smoke bomb comes in the form of a fake phone call saying that there's something going on in Boston. And yeah.
Beantown.
Sure.
USA. Sorry. Now I'm just derailing you not to make any valuable contributions.
No, that was hilarious, okay. Dan.
Well, sorry, continue.
Okay, so there's breaking news in Boston. I gotta go. I really wish you could come, but unfortunately the news is my mistress, and I must heed her beck and call. Mm-hmm. So the next day, Sandra Bullock is still swooning over this chance encounter in like an 88 Bronco with no backseat.
Right, sure.
A
real love mobile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, this dry hump on top of softball equipment has been so mind-blowingly erotic that I'm now...
That's not a euphemism for a package, right?
She decides, I'm gonna make a crossword puzzle all about Steve. I'm going to
titled All About Steve, in
exactly.
Fact.
And I'm going to.
Hey, isn't that the title of the movie, Dan?
Holy shit!
Clever stuff. Continue, bro.
So I'm going to deliver this crossword to my editor. He is going to print it sight unseen. It's going to go out to all the 7,402 readers in the Sacramento area. And this is how I will declare my love for Steve. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, due to his own incompetence, her editor sends this out without proofreading it, of course, and instantly blames Sandra Bullock for his mistake and fires her on the spot, thus making her now free to travel about the country and follow her new true love, Steve.
Where are they going to get the rest of their fucking crosswords from? Like,
there's a syndicated crossword, service.
I don't buy it. I think you're going to replace it with Sudoku or
you don't buy
Sherlock Fox or some shit.
You don't buy that every newspaper in the country doesn't have their own dedicated crossword writer.
Yeah, like the city of Sacramento.
Sure, okay. Yeah, so yeah, she follows Steve around. She, you know, like there's a three-legged baby. There's a big controversy about a three-legged baby, so she follows him there.
A story big enough that apparently this major news television news syndicate that's based in Sacramento sends their one reporter out to cover
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yes, played by Thomas Hayden Church.
Wings.
Yes, that's his most significant role. You will not talk about him being in Sideways. You will not talk about him being the Sandman in Spider-Man 3. Lowell from Wings. That's how we all know Thomas Hayden Church.
Okay.
So the majority of Act Two is Sandra Bullock tracking down Steve wherever he may his assignments call.
Yeah, various news stories.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a crazy stalker, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And like all crazy stalkers, she develops a following of weirdos and quirky people.
Yeah, weirdos.
Including DJ Qualls from one of my favorite movies of all time, The New Guy, where he plays the titular character, who is, in fact, a new guy.
He is a new guy. Yeah, DJ Qualls and Katie Mixon from the hit HBO series Eastbound and Down, where she is the love interest for one, what's his name?
For Kenny Powers.
Yeah,
played
Kenny
by
Powers.
Danny McBride.
Yeah. Mm. A Jody Hill joint. But anyway. So how does this all come to a head, Brock?
Sandra Bullock keeps tracking down Steve wherever he goes, goaded on by Thomas Hayden Church's Hampton Hughes, the dashing newsman who...
Hartman Hughes.
Hartman Hughes, yes, I'm sorry.
An even stranger non-name.
who apparently takes some sort of perverse pleasure out of torturing Steve by goading his stalker on him.
Yeah, there's no motivation established, but Thomas Hayden Church...
Other than comedic motivation.
Well, no, I mean, like, as you said, Stuart, you're like, I would totally fuck with my friends if they had a stalker. And Thomas Hayden Church...
Warning to all my friends out there.
That seems to be his only motivation. He pulls Sandra Bullock aside and he's like... Look, Steve is in love with you. Don't listen to him if he says any words like kooky or crazy or lunatic. Like, sure. You know, just Steve wants you. Just follow him around the country. And he takes great joy in letting Sandra Bullock know where Steve will be at any moment in time so she could follow him and harass him sexually.
Yeah, pretty much. They wind up in Texas, where a rare hurricane-tornado combination is pounding the Galveston area.
Mm-hmm.
They run into some cicadas.
There are cicadas in the movie.
Then, I guess, yeah, after the tornado, what, they hitch a ride to somewhere in Pennsylvania, I believe, where a school class of deaf children have fallen into a giant sinkhole.
Yeah, there's an abandoned mine. What?
They must have not heard the sinkhole.
They did not hear the sinkhole. Boom.
Hilarious.
Yeah, you showed those deaf children.
Hilarious.
Yeah, a bunch of deaf children fell into an abandoned mine, and there's a whole, like, there's a baby Jessica times 10 situation going on, and Thomas Hayden Church is out there, and, Sandra Bullock, following Steve, comes... And she comes and she runs. She's like, she sees Steve across the meadow.
And he looks good.
Yeah. Finally, after so many days of traveling across the country, I'm going to be reunited with Steve. And she runs across the meadow towards Steve.
When she said it, it was kind of higher pitched. And she managed to fit in a lot of trivia, more trivia.
You know, as Voltaire said, I disagree with what you say, but I'll defend your death the right to say it.
Good.
And she runs across the meadow, and she falls down the fucking sinkhole.
Directly into it. It's not like a rim shot. It's you know, it's swish down the mine to its...
I was expecting her legs to kick out comically.
No, she runs directly into a hole. Like, there's a reason that everyone's there. And, like, there's firemen, there's a big crane, but she runs right into the hole.
Not to get off on too much of a diatribe, but is apparently one of the motifs of the film, which everybody is terrible at their job. Mm-hmm. Sandra Bullock's editor publishes her crossword puzzle without even looking at it. These Thomas Hayden Church's newscaster is more than willing to just make up stuff on the spot. At some point, Bradley Cooper drops his camera.
There's a bus driver who deliberately leaves Sandra Bullock by the side of the road just because she's irritating.
Yes, these the teachers that are guarding this class of deaf children let them aimlessly just run ahead of them.
And then they miscount the number of deaf children that get pulled out of the hole.
Yeah, there's no buddy system here. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just there's one child who is still down there when Sandra Bullock falls down into the hole.
Yeah, when she does like a Pepe Le Pew, like floating on winds of love after Bradley Cooper and falls down the hole.
But anyway, you know, to wrap up the story, Sandra Bullock figures out a way to do like a counterweight thing with the crane. Like, the crane has already like fallen halfway down the sinkhole, so they can't use it normally, but she figures out a way of like using it as like a pulley and like pulling a counterweight. And Thomas Hayden Church has like jumped down the hole because he feels guilty about luring Sandra Bullock out here so she can fall down the hole. And so Sandra Bullock just adds a few more rocks to the counterweight and she gets up out of the hole.
Apparently it was a rock mine.
But not until after she's had her like Smeagol and Gollum like moment where she, you know, she talks to herself for a while in front of this deaf girl.
Mm-hmm. And the deaf girl says that she talks too much.
Well, she doesn't say that. She signs it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same.
But that's the irony of it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But then at the end, Bradley Cooper has come to realize that Sandra Bullock is special and not just in a mentally like deficient way.
In the words of the TV newscast that he overhears, she's crazy smart like Ted Kaczynski. He thinks that's an unfair characterization of
totally
her.
Unmotivated. This other channel.
Ted Kaczynski was smart in a completely different way.
This other channel is smearing Sandra Bullock for no reason. This woman who's just falling down a hole. Like, that's all they know about her. Like,
granted,
this...
she fell down the hole because she's an idiot.
It's true.
Or very unobservant.
But then they're like, oh, she's crazy smart, like this homegrown terrorist.
Mm-hmm. Bradley Cooper defends her by saying she sees things other people don't mm-hmm. see, which does not include holes in the ground. Because other people see that, but she's quite oblivious.
But if anything, you're better off in life being able to see holes in the ground than any sort of hidden insight into people's souls or erudite knowledge.
But Sandra Bullock makes her way out of the hole.
But if she hadn't fallen in that hole, that deaf girl probably would have gotten eaten by chuds or magmen sure. or some shit.
More people. No, it's fine. It was all to the good. But and also, Bradley Cooper learned that Sandra Bullock had something to offer.
Yeah, a lesson.
But they do not end up together.
Weird.
There's not enough. There's not enough there.
Where's the rom in this com?
There's no rom.
There's no rom
in this com. Sandra Bullock is hoisted on the shoulders of her supporters, who just support her basically because she fell down a well. You know, like, that's it. Like, it's baby Jessica all over again.
Aspiring politicians fall down a hole.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that Ace in the Hole taught us that years and years ago. But and Bradley Cooper looks on, shaking his head as if to say, like, oh, Sandra Bullock, wicked smart, but we can't have a relationship. But God bless her.
Yeah.
God bless that.
She probably
that crazy
would have been
girl.
Pretty good in bed, though.
She would have been a demon in bed.
Yeah.
Like boots stay on.
Nice. That's pretty crazy. Okay. So yeah, that was pretty much. Oh, Jason Jones is in this. He's funny.
A lot of fucking people are in this. Kerry Kenny Silver from The State and Reno 911 has a small role. As we said, DJ Qual, Katie Mixon, MC Gainey, as people know, is Mr. Friendly from Lost. Was in this movie as a trucker who gave Sandra Bullock a ride.
Good casting.
Wait. Yeah, like the as I said before, like the below the line cast is amazing on this movie.
Keith David.
Keith David, mm-hmm. as
you might know from many video game voiceover works.
Yeah, or the guy that Rowdy Roddy Piper fought with in They Live.
Sure.
But he was the boss of Bradley Cooper and Thomas Hayden Church. Like, a really strong cast. They all read the script for All About Steve, and they're like, sign me fucking up.
And I might point out that, Steve's boss is terrible. Just to continue that theme, he frequently puts things on the air live without any sort of pre-taping, or without any sort of coaching as to what's actually going to be covered.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, there's a thing where there's a hostage situation where, like, there's a dead horse, and Tom Hayden Church is making a big deal about the dead horse, but apparently the dead horse is just trained to fall over when he hears a gunshot, and there was a backfiring car. And so that was a big story that went out live.
It was a very unfunny scene that we all had to watch. Yeah.
Which, pardon the question again, but how much longer is a backfiring car going to be able to be a comedic trope? I mean, nobody has standard transmissions anymore. It's all automatic. Cars don't backfire anymore.
You're ruining me living in this neighborhood, Brock, because... For the audience, for the people who don't know where I live, which would be all of the Flophouse audience, I live in not a terrible neighborhood, but a neighborhood where I constantly hear things where I'm like, are those gunshots?
Sure.
And I tell myself that they're backfiring cars, and you're telling me they're
champagne popping.
Yeah.
Somebody listening to the TV too loud. And
we should also
pipe.
Fill in that Dan does live in a neighborhood that has lots of champagne popping going on. Lots to celebrate in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Life has been good to everybody who lives around these parts.
Brooklyn.
So you're telling me that those are all gunshots. So, all right. Thank you for that. Anywho.
At least they're not like crossbows. Mm-hmm. That'd be weird.
That would be weird.
You'd be on the lookout for vampires or some shit.
Yeah. If I heard a lot of bolts whizzing through the air.
Yeah, like crossbow bolts.
Yeah. So, speaking of crossbows.
Okay.
The presentation of crosswords in this film is a little strange to me. First off, Sandra Bullock, as we said, rom-com. She has to have a quirky job, and the job that they gave her was crossword writer.
Yeah, that bothers you.
It does bother me. Well, there's a lot of weird stuff. Like, the first scene that we see her, interacting with her editors, her going in and insisting, like, hey, we could do crosswords 5 days a week, and it could be like the Times, and like there'd be an easy one on Monday and a hard one on Friday, and the guy's like, yeah, we're a small newspaper, we can't do crosswords every weekday. So apparently there's just one crossword a week for this newspaper. And I think that most newspapers that carry a crossword actually have crosswords all through the week.
Yeah, that's if only typical. So people will, you know, like, will read it every week and
do the crossword. I mean, as print fails, like, the crossword is actually something that is still popular. People actually care about it. I mean, it's, you know, now that the Sudoku has come along, it's less popular, but people care about the crossword. So that was weird to me, number one.
It was weird to me that then he used that as an opportunity to not only edit her work, but also edit her life, the way she lives it, saying, why don't you be more normal?
Yeah, like, why don't you go out and have a date instead of coming out with extra crosswords?
Why don't you go out to Chili's and have a nice meal?
Margarita night.
Yeah.
It's ultimate margaritas at Chili's. But also, All About Steve, as we talked about, this crossword got through the...
We got greenlit.
Got through the editing process. Yeah. I mean, there were you know, questions like, you know, number one across would be something like, Steve's eye color. You know, like, number two across would be like, what Steve's lips taste like.
What was strange was people's reaction to it, though. Because we first see the reaction before finding out what the crossword actually was made up of. Mm-hmm. And people are like, this doesn't make sense.
That was fine.
What's going on here? But what doesn't make sense to me is that, like, it's pretty clear that they just don't know who Steve is. Like, what color are Steve's eyes? Yeah, like, I don't know who the fuck Steve is. Like, it's not that it doesn't make sense. Like, it's not like they're trying to have me make a crossword in, like, three dimensions or something. Uh-huh. That wouldn't make sense. But, like,
that would blow your fucking mind.
I would just be like, well, I don't know who Steve is, so that I can't answer this. Yeah, this is too difficult.
This is a bullshit crossword.
It's too difficult, is what I'm trying to say. It's not like they broke the laws of crosswords.
I think it actually is more like they broke the laws of crosswords, because, like, when you do a crossword,
because Yuli's gold wasn't one of the questions.
Well, no, but you're entering into a pact with the crossword writer. Like, okay, this is general knowledge.
This is somehow knowable.
Yeah, rather than like, this is about a guy that I met.
But although I would like to see Will Shores put together something about a guy he met. If only just to see that window into his soul open up. These are the people he hangs out with. He has a mustache, just like Steve, or just like Will.
Yeah. No, but what bothered me more was, like, in that montage, like, it started out like normal, like people, like, you know, doing the crossword on the bus. Like, oh, I hate this crossword. This doesn't make any sense. But then there was literally a scene where it was a bathroom, and all of the people in the bathroom stall, the camera panned down from one person in the bathroom stall to the next person, and they're all apparently doing this crossword at the same time, complaining about this crossword. And this is a town where, like, crosswords are the bee's knees. Everyone does the crossword.
And apparently everybody uses the toilet at the same time, because yes, there were no empty stalls.
Yes, everyone does the crossword while on the toilet and discusses the crossword.
That's why they're all
full, with everyone
else, because that's what they're doing is working the crossword in the toilet. Mm-hmm. In this day and age of, like, portable electronic devices, you would think that there wouldn't be quite as many people that are going nuts about the local paper's crosswords.
But yeah, I do the crossword on my iPhone, but I do not do the local crossword.
Oh, really?
I do whatever crossword.
Like a fancy crossword?
Sure,
whatever.
As a New Yorker, I have to say the local crossword is too hard for me.
Okay.
I do the Onions crossword, which is easier.
Okay, that's good.
But anyway.
Yuli's Gold on there a lot?
You and Yuli's Gold.
It's a great movie, dude. Sure. So, what else is going on with this movie? I didn't really care about the crossword stuff, and there wasn't any romance. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't funny.
Was there any
romance? Jason, I laughed at a couple of the Jason Jones jokes.
Yeah, Jason mm-hmm. Jones acquitted himself well.
Game.
We were talking about how it was bad that Elliot was. It was good that Elliot was not here, because Elliot may need make fun of his coworker Jason Jones. But Jason Jones was one of the bright spots in the film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he came out of the movie relatively unscathed, I feel like.
Ken Jeong
of The Hangover fame, Knocked Up, TV's Community.
Yeah,
he was in this movie.
Kind of a boring role for him.
Yeah, though. Very boring. Mm. Nothing to really say about him.
If you ever want to see Ken Jeong as a straight man, rent All About Steve.
Yeah, if you're tired of him, like, doing crazy funny improvs where he's yelling about stuff and wanted to just be like a pussycat character, this is the film for you.
Also, if you want to waste an evening, you can also rent this movie. Similar thing.
If you want to hit yourselves in the balls with the hammer, you could watch this movie instead. If you don't have a hammer,
yeah, I mean, for the, I guess the same feeling is that what you're going for.
That's okay. What I'm saying.
Sure,
it's equivalent.
If you ever want to see Sandra Bullock slide down a banister in nothing but a towel and a bathing cap,
why would she think that's a good idea? She's coming out of the bathroom. She's put a
the
towel
actress
around
or
herself.
The character.
Well, anyone involved in the film. She's coming out of the bathroom. She's had a bath. She has just a towel around, and she's going to slide down a banister and literally.
Her
you can imagine
wet. You don't slide very well.
No, but like also she slings her leg over. You can imagine her bare vagina is what is sliding down this banister. You're looking at me, Stuart.
I'm thinking about a bear's vagina right now.
I thought you were looking at me as if you weren't imagining that, but that's the only thing you can think about.
It's
like she's nude and she's sliding down this banister.
It's an image that gets stuck in your head and it makes you realize why some people have sex with Nazis.
I guess you're right.
If you've ever wondered what drove a man to stick it into some white supremacist tattooed lady, it is that scene in the film.
Topical.
Oh, right. The cowboy fella that she was married to.
Jesse James.
Yeah. Of the James gang.
Famous, famous bank robber.
He fell out of a time machine, right? Into a tattoo parlor.
And married Oscar winner Sandra Bullock.
And Razzie winner, right?
Yeah, she won
a
Razzie.
One of them Razzies.
No, we should talk about that because she is desperately committed to this part. Like, she is really pouring her heart and soul into this, and the movie is not giving back to her. Like, this is an ill-conceived role. This role is supposed to be lovably quirky, but you watch this film and you're like, this woman has a mental disorder of some kind. Like, she is way down on the Asperger scale. Like, she has a disability.
Right? No, clearly, yeah.
Yeah. It's not funny.
It's not her bad highlights. Boom.
Boom. Zing.
Boom, hairdresser. Now I was about to make a comment like it might not be fair for her to get a Razzie because I mean her part's just written really poorly in a really poorly written movie in general. But
and as people reported, she was a good sport. She showed up to the Razzie. She accepted her Razzie in person.
And I guess it, when you're nominated for an Oscar, like it's not like they're like, oh well, you know, the only reason they're winning is because they got like their part was written really well. I mean, so I guess it's her fault.
Certainly not true for The Blind Side. Zing! Boom!
Man, good one, dude.
Anyway.
Well, regardless, I mean, she's still a producer on the film. She has the power to rewrite stuff if it's not
working.
Yeah,
there's a certain amount of culpability.
Yeah,
it was really bad. She wasn't funny at all. There's a lot of failed attempts. Like, I haven't not... it's tough for a woman to be in a... kind of like a physical comedy, like a comedy
in a man's world, Stuart.
In a man's world, absolutely, which is physical comedy to some extent. And I mean, like it hasn't been since we watched Dirty Love together that I've seen a woman try to do like wacky, gross out comedy or just wacky comedy and fail so badly.
Yeah,
and it'd be like ridiculously painful to watch.
Oh God. This movie, guys.
But yeah. But this movie didn't feature a scene where Jenny McCarthy is slipping around on her menstrual blood in a grocery store.
That did not happen.
No.
This movie did have a tornado in it for some reason.
There was a tornado.
It had a tornado and Sandra Bullock falling down a well. Two things that I did not expect to see in All About Steve.
Yeah, actually, those were surprises. I didn't spend 20 minutes of this movie in the bathroom crying like I expected, so that was kind of a surprise.
Scrubbing yourself.
Yep.
Scrubbing the dirt off.
But I just can't get clean.
I got to see Sandra Bullock's likeness carved into an apple, which is something that I never thought I'd see.
That's true. You do get that.
DJ Qualls' character trait is he somehow makes a living selling apple carvings of famous people, like Mother Teresa and...
Skinny thespian DJ Qualls. That's his quirky job in this film.
It's a living.
Mm-hmm. Pays well enough to get bumper stickers made.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is the last thing you see before the car disappears into a volcano. I mean, a tornado, rather.
Wait, there's a volcano? Oh, man. Yeah. I didn't even see the cicadas.
They're saving that for the sequel. Oh, and Sandra Bullock will somehow be able to reconstruct it out of the wreckage, like she did in this film when the car disappeared in the tornado.
Yeah, yeah, they fixed the car. Oh, man, I don't even want to talk about that.
This movie, I mean, in a way, this movie felt like a weird, like the movie wanted to be kind of a parody of a rom-com, you know? Like I feel like...
Okay, try and sell me on this idea, Dave.
I feel like it's two steps away from being a smarter movie that's like, hey, you know what? Every fucking protagonist in a romantic comedy is actually mentally ill. And what they're doing is stalking, and it's crazy. But this movie did not have the courage of its convictions, because halfway through the movie, they start making Sandra Bullock a lovable misfit, and at the end of the movie, Bradley Cooper is like, oh, you know what, she's just a sweetheart, you know, people don't understand her, she's smart, and she's funny, and she's great, and someday she's gonna find someone who really makes her happy, you know, but like, up until that point, like, it kind of felt like it wanted to be a little smarter than it was, and be like, you know what, these people are fucking loons. And you should be afraid of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all the other... The way the characters, up until about the midpoint of the film, react to Sandra Bullock's character is completely rational. I mean, they openly tell her to her face that she is insane and that she shouldn't be behaving this way. And, you know, she is acting like a sociopath. But...
And that she makes a lot of these choices that are typical romantic comedy choices, like just up and, like, running along to go see this guy. And, like, even the world starts going against her a little bit. Like, the bus driver's like, man, this fucking bitch is crazy, and kicks her off the bus, or, like, tricks her to get off the bus. And it's almost like the world is trying to, like, show you that this person, like, that kind of behavior is not going to actually succeed for you.
Yeah.
And in a way, it doesn't, but it's still, it's terrible to watch.
Oh, God. I don't know. I think that we need to shut it down, guys. I think we need to make our final judgments on this film.
Okay.
So, to sum up again, for people who don't listen regularly, the categories are, is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie that you actually kind of liked in some way? Stuart, I'm going to go to you first, because you were staring pensively off into the middle distance while wearing my hat.
I'm actually kind of divided on this one, because it is a terrible movie, and it isn't really that much fun to watch, but there's enough stupid stuff in it, and enough stuff that is really questionable, a lot of the decisions are questionable, that it makes it, like, you kind of want to watch it, because it's kind of fun to watch this terribly made movie, and a lot of people that have been good in other things, like Keith David, for instance, getting a chance to act in a movie. So I can't completely say one or the other. This is a terrible movie, though.
Okay.
It doesn't really work on any level.
Brock, what do you have to say about
it? I would say that this is a bad, 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 bad movie.
Okay.
It's good if you want to be infuriated by by loose threads that are never explained, by the fact that it could not have been written if not for Wikipedia, the amount of trivia that is crammed into Sandra Bullock's dialogue. I did not.
It's not really dialogue, though. It's mainly just monologues.
Yeah, it's as if her inner monologue is somehow being broadcast to the viewers.
Such an irritating principal character. Mm-hmm. Like, a character that every time she's on the screen, it makes you want to go into the other room. And that's a large portion of the movie.
Yeah, true. I'm going to go, you know, it's going to be a full spectrum. I'm gonna give this a marginal good-bad rating, because I feel like it's a weird... This movie's a weird duck. There's, like, individual jokes in it that are actually genuinely funny. Because, like, someone involved in it had, like, some instincts to do, like, smart things. I mean, like, there's good casting. There's some, like, really, like, wacky stuff that is kind of funny. But, like, those good jokes are not connected to anything larger. As a movie on the whole, it's, like, completely ill-conceived. The main character, as we said, is a lunatic who you don't have sympathy for because she's just irritating, and she doesn't have any, like, social sense of anything at all. However, like, part of the movie, like, wants to be a little subversive and, you know, point out the fact that she's a lunatic who you should not be sympathizing with. But then the movie goes soft and, you know, wants to have it both ways and have her, like, be, like, a lovable misfit. But there's enough stuff in it that's just, like, so well-conceived that you have to see it. I kind of want to recommend it as a good bad movie.
The thing is that it's like there's large chunks of the movie where they're trying to get across this message of like, oh, just be yourself. Like, mm-hmm. oh, Sandra Bullock, this quirky person. Like, oh, like she's an original, but no, in fact, she's like an autistic person. And not to say anything bad about autistic people, but like you don't want to be one.
Like, well, if you had the choice,
yeah. Like, but what I'm trying to say is, you're not like, I want to be like a crazy autistic person. Like, nobody's gonna say that. Not even an autistic person. So, I don't like that point doesn't work. Like, because she's not just like a quirky creative person. She's a person with a handicap.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're gonna hear from a lot of people with autism. I feel like after you've,
I'm sorry,
crisis averted.
It's okay.
All right. Now that's been done, I'm going to move on to sort of mailbag. This is not technically the mailbag. We're going to talk about some of the comments on the last episode.
Okay.
First off, we got a comment about how we were looking for Flophouse babies. People who were conceived during the Flophouse. And Guardo, the gentleman who has the Hotcakes podcast, who couldn't remember my name for a while, but then apologized for not knowing my name.
Sure.
Says,
you're not that memorable, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's, we've established that.
Stan, right? Stan McCoy?
All About Stan. And by the way, this film, you know, All About Steve, not that great, but certainly better than the magnificent Stambersons and... But not quite as good as The Postman Always Rings Gary. So I just want to clear that up. But Guardo says, just a comment regarding Flophouse babies. My wife is pregnant with our first child who was conceived via IUI, intrauterine insemination.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. But he says, since the procedure was performed on a Monday, it's possible that the conception did take place while I was listening to the podcast. More specifically, it would have been the Dragon Ball Evolution episode. I've been racking my brain to figure out a way to name the child regardless of sex after all of you guys. Is there a single name that captures the spirit of Dan, Elliot, and Stuart, or do you guys happen to all share a middle name? That would be crazy, man.
What I would recommend first is to talk to your wife about this one.
Number one. Yeah, I don't know.
El Danuart.
Yeah, El Danuart.
There's something very medieval about that name. I think sounds like a forgotten knight.
I think that's the. I think that's currently the fifth most popular male name.
Sounds like a title, like the title of a Spanish robber. El Danuart.
Yeah, we meet again. I don't want to take anything away from this fine gentleman because, you know, he's the only one who's so far responded to our call.
Conceived a baby too while listening to the flyback.
Exactly, but I don't know whether this counts. I don't know whether insemination counts as conceiving to the flop. Well, it's not like they were fucking.
Religion doesn't have to come into this, dude.
Well, I don't know what you're saying about religion.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying something about
religion. No, I'm saying that I want people to be involved in the carnal act of love while listening to our show. I want to think of us as like facilitators. We set a romantic mood.
So you're more interested in finding out the people that have sex while listening to our podcast
I'm
rather
more interested
than the actual creation of children.
No, childbirth is a miracle, Stuart.
Yeah. No doubt.
But I want to hear the dirty, dirty stories of people fucking.
Like, okay.
While listening to our show. That's what I want to hear.
Cool. Yeah, that's I mean,
Brock, you can understand this.
Well,
right?
I think my main concern is that why would you ever deprive the world of a little Guardo Jr. or Guardo the II?
I like that.
Yeah.
It's such a great name.
You don't need to make it Flophouse related. Yeah. I mean, when you have a name like Guardo.
It's a beautiful name.
Pass it on to the next musical.
Yeah, I also, too, want to hear dirty, dirty tales of banging to a podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about Elliot while I do it. Does that count?
That's the only way you can maintain an erection.
Yeah. I'm not going to keep talking.
I'm gonna run through. Like, we had a lot of comments on the last show. I'm gonna run through.
Is that a good thing or?
No, it is a good thing. Okay. But there was a request. We should do a Flophouse Movie Minute of your depressing recipes.
Okay. What was depressing about
your unemployment recipes?
Oh, okay.
As one of the commenters says, Matt. He says, "I was trying to remember all of Stuart's recipes from memory last night. And could only remember the grilled cheese hamburger one."
It's a good one.
Yeah. What is that exactly?
What you do is you've had a hamburger before, right, Brock?
I have.
Well, I'm going to flip your lid. Imagine instead of two buns, okay?
Okay.
You have two grilled cheese sandwiches.
And then the burger in the middle?
Burger in the middle. Now, let's take that a step further. Okay. Instead of bread, you have Red Baron frozen pizzas. Okay?
Okay.
And instead of cheese, you have like cream cheese or like Gruyere or Brie. And then for the bottom, we're going to make this even crazier. You have two Oreo pizzas, okay, the dessert pizzas. Okay, and instead of cheese, you have, you'd still have cheese. Probably cheddar. I think cheddar.
Yeah, cheddar goes well with most sweets.
Something to add. You know, like an apple pie with cheddar on it.
Yeah.
So that's and then you have obviously, you know, 100% ground beef. Mm-hmm. I usually go a little bit lean sometimes. Instead of beef, I use bison meat, okay, because that's a little better for me.
Yeah, a little healthier.
Or a little ostrich, maybe.
I prefer the bison because it makes me feel more like a guy who just killed a bison.
Sure. You feel like you're depleting one of the natural resources of this great land.
Yeah, well, what about an ostrich, dude? They're endangered, too.
It's not indigenous, though.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Australian, it would be, right?
Okay, well, sure, fair enough. Anyway, we're going to continue. we're running low on time, actually. Apparently, we had more to say about this film tonight than I thought.
Madness.
But there was the message boards were on fire, Stuart. Yeah, they were on fire about Back to the Future Part 2. And they were all in agreement that I was right, that there was a paradox in Back to the Future Part 2. I just recommend that everyone listening goes to the FlophousePodcast.com, www.theflophousepodcast.com. And reads the comments about Back to the Future Part 2 and the paradox inherent in it.
Are you talking to our listeners or me?
I'm talking specifically to you, Stuart, because you seem so disinterested in my long digression about Back to the Future.
Biff-world argument?
No, it was not a bit. Go back and listen to The Law-Abiding Citizen. But there was a commenter that said specifically... That he finds it amusing that all of the comments about on the message boards were about Back to the Future and not Law Abiding Citizen. That was
apparently that was like an open and shut case. Like there's nothing more that can be said about Law Abiding Citizen after what we said.
Yeah, but there's so much. There's a rich vein to dive into with the Back to the Future films.
Yeah, Law Abiding Citizen, you've been served. Stick a fork in that movie, it's been properly
Step
cooked.
Up to the streets.
Sure. Are we going to watch... There's a 3D one of those coming out. Are we going to watch that?
Holy shit, we are going to... Well, that's the summer.
It'll be weird, though, because... Wait, can we watch in 3D on the TV here? We might have to go to the movie theater.
We may have to go to the movie theater and do a Flophouse...
Excursion.
Field trip.
Which we'll let everybody know when we're going, so we can get a theater bursting with Flophouse fans.
Sure. I'm sure that'll happen. Now the next thing that we do here is we talk about movies that we actually enjoyed, just to make us seem less like jerks. And so Brock, I know that you've put a lot of thought into this.
I have.
So
yeah, this is a movie that recommend? I saw recently with Elliot. It's entitled A New Leaf. It's written and directed and starring Elaine May. It's one of her first. Filmmaking efforts. It also stars Walter Matthau as a incredibly obscenely rich millionaire who has lost all his money through his profligate ways. And he comes up with a deal with his uncle who hates him. Basically, loan me $50,000 for the next 6 weeks and I will find somebody that I can marry and then live off of for the rest of my life. And what Walter Matthau then hides from his uncle is that if he doesn't find a wife within 6 weeks, he is going to kill himself. So it's a whirlwind tour of all the freakish women of high society. And eventually, right before the end of the 6 weeks, he finds Elaine May's character, who is who's quirky but charmingly so, and a botanist.
Unlike Sandra Bullock,
exactly. It's the quirks are maintained. She actually shows proficiency at her job, which is botany. She is constantly and appropriately using metaphors related to her job. Unlike Sandra Bullock in this film, who is amazingly adept at talking about crossword puzzling in a vague and
unappealing,
non-specific way. But anyway, to get back to A New Leaf, which is a very funny, very very entertaining film, I would recommend it highly. It's after Walter Matthau falls or attempts to woo Elaine May, he decides that he's going to kill her and take over her estate. But as time goes on, realizes that he has second thoughts about his course of action. It also stars a surprisingly sexy Doris Roberts, which is a side of her that I never thought I would see.
I'm not surprised.
Okay.
But yeah, very entertaining. It's a rom-com that is heavy on the com, which is will be a nice palate cleanser after anybody who dares to watch All About Steve.
Well, I haven't watched anything new recently. I haven't had time to watch anything new recently that I would recommend. But I did rewatch The Man Who Wasn't There, which is a Coen Brothers movie that I feel was unjustly forgotten.
I agree with you 100%. I think that every day that goes by, I think that might be their best film.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would go that far, but it's a very strong movie that, it came... Did it come directly after Fargo or directly after the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, it came. I think it was even the same year as Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, or at least within the same 12 months.
Because
it was, it came back to back really quickly. And yeah, for whatever reason, I agree with you. Sort of slipped off the radar for whatever reason.
And I like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou a lot, but I actually like The Man Who Wasn't There better. And I like The Man Who Wasn't There better than some of the later Coen Brothers movies that have gotten sort of more respect because it's more Coen-y. Like, it has a lot of distilled Coen-ness, and it's beautifully shot. It's, it's a pastiche, but it's not, like, slavishly so. Like, it has its own thing going on. It manages to take all of these cultural, like, signifiers from the time period that it's set in and turn them into something new, and I feel like the end of The Man Who Wasn't There is actually deeply moving.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly funny film, but at the same time, there's like a rich vein of sadness that gets mined frequently. Billy Bob Thornton's his performance I always find fascinating in how much he's able to convey without doing anything.
Well, I think the Coens, like, I mean, the rap against them is always that they're like these unsympathetic puppet masters, but I feel like I feel like that's people who I said this online, like I was writing something. I feel like this is people who confuse being nice with being good. Like the Coens do not ever allow their characters to get away with anything. Like they cast a very stern eye on them, but at the same time, like, there's a lot of sympathy and empathy there, I feel like, for their characters. And, Billy Bob Thornton is this guy who's caught up in something sort of larger that he doesn't ever fully understand, but it's very sad and touching at the end, mm-hmm. where he comes to. Stuart, what do you think?
Well, guys, I'm going to recommend a movie that I saw recently. But I'm not actually going to talk very much about it because I think a lot has already been said. Watched Rambo First Blood Part 2. And there's this really awesome scene where he's shooting arrows at a village and all the village explodes. And there's this other scene where this woman he loves gets shot with an AK-47.
by a bunch of dudes with AK-47s. So he picks up an AK-47 and kind of fires indiscriminately at them. And one by one, they start falling down dead. And yeah, he fires way more bullets than would be in the clip. But that's cool because it's Rambo, man. So yeah, Rambo First Blood Part 2. Good movie.
Fair enough. The full spectrum tonight of recommendations.
Laughs, sadness, and awesome battling.
Hey guys, all about Steve.
Yeah, plugs. Anyone want to plug? I got
to
plug.
Oh, you wanted to plug something.
I got to plug something. First of all, I'd like everyone to know that if you live in the Park Slope or Windsor Terrace. No, I don't know. If you live near Flatbush, you should go to Charlene's Bar to watch the World Cup because we just got a projector and it's really cool, and we're going to be serving bagels and coffee. And I'm going to be there, so if you want to talk about soccer or crappy movies, I'll be there. And I'll be work. I got a job, Dan.
Holy shit!
I did, yeah.
Talk about burying the lead.
I know. I'm going to be working a couple of shifts at Prospect Park for Celebrate Brooklyn. So if you want to see me working,
now this is a free concert series that Brooklyn puts on in Prospect Park.
So, and if you want to see, have a free autograph from Stuart, you can come by and yell at me, and I'll sign something for you.
Yeah, you'll be at the bar.
Probably, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, as long as we're plugging things, I will plug 9ammeeting.com.
Do it.
My animated web series. Brock, would you like to plug something?
I'll plug whimquarterly.com, the humor magazine that's currently now in its third issue. It features writing from people like Dan and a lot of other very talented people, and it's a humor magazine. It's printed on flammable paper. You know, the heat goes out one cold winter night. You're going to wish that you'd bought 20, so you have some kindling for the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get some laughs, and then you get a fire.
Yeah, you get bigger laughs as you watch it. You know, crinkle and burn in the flames.
It's beautifully put together. If I was not a contributor, I would still enjoy this magazine. So, guys, I guess that's it. Brock, I hope that you have lived to regret insisting upon a worse movie than Paul Blart Mall Cop.
I'm going to ask for a secretly good movie for next time around. But, okay. But thank you very much for having me.
Request one of those too.
Yeah. But yeah, this is the second time that I've done it, and it's always a lot of fun. So thanks for having me back.
Well, thanks for coming. And it's time to sign off. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I've been Brock Mahan.
Good night, everyone. Night.
You're taller than Elliot, too. I think that goes to your credit. I mean, I don't have any. I don't have a background in. I'm not a working screenwriter or anything, Dan. I'm not a working comedy writer.